Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Yesterday, a little after 7 p.m., I doused myself in mosquito repellent to take a walk. My objective was, yes, exercise, but I had another goal in mind: investigation. I wanted to see for myself whether there are, as people have been reporting in Missouri, more fireflies flitting about this summer than in past years. I'm going to hold my personal findings for a little later because I want to hear what experts have to say. As it happens, two such authorities are with us today to discuss what's happening with fireflies and other insect species in our midst. And those experts are Tad the Bug Dad Yankowski. He's the senior entomologist at the Missouri Botanical Garden Butterfly House. Tad, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Emily Althoff, an urban entomologist with MU Extension and Lincoln University. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
And we'd like to invite you to the conversation. What's been your firefly experience this year and in years past? Are you noticing more or less of them in your backyard or on your evening walks? Call us at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Or you can send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. So I have used the term fireflies, but let's start with the nomenclature. What do you call them, Tad?
I grew up in New York State, and we always called them lightning bugs, but here we call them fireflies more than that.
Oh, yes, and speaking to the here, Emily, you grew up in Belleville. What did you call them over there?
I always grew up calling them fireflies, but I've heard them both ways. They can sometimes be interchangeable depending on the region.
So regionally, how does that break down, Tad?
It seems to be more in the north, northeast. You see a lot of fireflies, you know, it's sort of like the Coke, Pepsi, soda pop debate. Depending on where you are in the country, you'll get one versus the other.
Okay. Well, I did grow up seeing fireflies in Ontario, but I did not see any there. The way that people talk about and think about fireflies, I want to know, actually, what are some of your early memories of fireflies? Emily?
Yeah, I grew up in Southern Illinois, Metro East St. Louis area, and our house when I was growing up butted right up to a cornfield. And in my backyard, we would see all kinds of fireflies, lightning bugs in the backyard, and we'd chase them with our jars and we just kind of watch them light up the night. And it was really, really beautiful. And it definitely left an impact on me as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Tad, how about you?
My best friend growing up was the person who introduced me to entomology. And he lived on a farm and we would go there and camp at night in tents in a field, and we would fill our tents up with fireflies. And so they'd be lighting up all around us as we slept in the tent.
Oh my goodness.
And that's my earliest memory.
Oh, that's so cool.
It sounds beautiful and also a little bit scary because I do have a bit of a fear of insects. I mean, how long does that light last?
They would be active for an hour or two, and then they would usually sort of roost for the evening, kind of go to sleep, and then the next morning we'd make sure we found them all and put them back under a tree or someplace safe for them.
So this reporting that people have been doing, I can see why. It seems like folks have very vivid memories of their playing with lightning bugs or fireflies in their youth or just sort of enjoying them. I saw them for the first time actually just 10 years ago in Ripon, Wisconsin, and it was a revelation. I saw them actually at a wedding, so it just made it even more memorable. What is it, though, with these numbers, the higher numbers that people are reporting this year? What could be behind that, Emily?
Well, one of the components that could be playing a role here is the amount of rain that we've been seeing. One thing that could also be playing a role, especially this time of year, is the temperature. And so at this time of year, this is when a lot of those adult fireflies are flying around.
And what is this connection with rain, Tad?
Well, they overwinter is the larva stage. Fireflies are beetles, and so they have an immature stage that is fairly vulnerable to the environment. When we have drier or hotter seasons, like it's been the last couple years, it may be harder for them to survive the winter. Mm-hmm. Also, they're dependent on certain animals for food, like slugs and snails and worms. Some of those animals don't like it as dry, and if you have lots of food for them, you're going to have lots of fireflies, which is actually one other thing that I think is contributing to the boom this year. Last year, we had millions and billions of cicadas.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
And, you know, if you were out in the woods or any place with trees, you inevitably saw piles of cicada shells or even dead cicadas sort of building up. And you'd see snails and slugs opportunistically nibbling on them. Well, if you have extra snail babies, extra slug babies, that's extra food for those fireflies.
Mm-hmm. Well, humans were nibbling on them too, right, Tad?
Yes, a few of us were.
Yes.
We were actually doing that in studio, or in our green room. I tried one for the very first time. I don't know if I'll do it again, but at least the seal has been broken, so to speak. Emily, is there anything that you have to add to what Tad has shared?
No, I absolutely agree with Tad's sentiments regarding that. If you have more of the organisms that the firefly larvae are able to consume, that would definitely be an additional factor bolstering populations.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the cicadas, like I was thinking about that because I was avoiding being outside during that time. Not only there was this joke about like don't run with your mouth open, but also the sound. Are people like Lois, who wrote to us saying that that she's been watching fireflies from her back steps and then waiting actually for the bats to swoop around as it gets to dark. The observations that people are making and then the numbers themselves. Emily, do you have any insight into how these observations people are making are measuring up against numbers?
I think that it is... We have a lot to study when it comes to firefly populations and even firefly biology. There are some species that are a bit cryptic, so it's difficult for us to make broad generalizations about the group as a whole. And so there's a lot of folks that are looking at the gaps here. And yeah, mm-hmm. We're still learning a lot.
Yeah, Tad.
Unfortunately, a lot of the information we have for firefly populations is somewhat anecdotal. You know, hey, we're seeing a lot this year. And what we've learned as scientists when we interact with, citizen scientists, people are engaged. If someone is saying they're seeing a lot of something, they probably are, and it is probably a bumper year for them. But what we sometimes get in the habit of is we don't really realize how much the population has been in decline over the last series of decades. And what we may be seeing is what historically would have been a relatively normal number of fireflies, but just in comparison to the last few years, it seems like there's a lot more.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the new normal considerations that should go into our understanding, you know, what is happening with this one particular insect, which is the firefly, Tad?
Well, when you're talking about firefly conservation, there's a lot of factors that are in play that could be leading to their decline or things that we can work on to help them. First is something that's more unique to fireflies and other night-flying insects is light pollution.
Mm.
For fireflies specifically, they use their flashes to find a mate. The male and females will flash across a field, sometimes pretty far distances, to find each other. And if there's even a single bright street lamp or light on the back of your porch, maybe it could even just be the light from your window, from your dining room. That might be enough to prevent them from finding each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't find each other, then it just ends, you know, their ability to start the next generation.
Right. On that note about the next generation, what exactly is the lightning bug's role in the broader ecosystem? What is it that they eat, for instance? And then what in turn considers them a food source? Emily?
So, yeah, like I believe Tad said earlier, those larvae can live 2+ years in our soil systems. And one of the things that they do within that soil system is they feed on worms, snails, slugs, and even caterpillars. So if you have a garden, they can sometimes function as a natural pest control agent. They overwinter as those larvae, and so they're in that stage for quite some time. Once they emerge as adults, some eat pollen, some are predators, some are even predators of other fireflies, and some of them don't eat at all. It's really dependent on the species itself.
How many species are there of firefly? I mean, so when we say fireflies, it's like we're generally like lumping them all together. Are there ones that are more common in the St. Louis region, including, you know, the Metro East, across the river, than might be, you know, in other parts of the state, Tad?
Well, in Missouri, there's in the neighborhood of 40 firefly species. It's not unusual for many firefly species to be pretty regionally limited. Across North America, there's some that are only found in like a single wetland area or a very specific part of a state. In Missouri itself, there are no species that are officially listed as threatened or endangered, but fireflies across the board are definitely in decline. About a third of all species in North America that have enough data to sort of make a decision are considered to be threatened, or perhaps going on the path towards being endangered or even extinct. The most common firefly we see around here is the Big Dipper firefly. It's very noticeable because it makes a J
Oh,
flash.
yes. We actually had some conversation about that at the station. Yeah, continue, please.
Those fireflies, you know, aren't what we would consider officially threatened or endangered at this time. However, conservationists are paying attention, and if they're going and trending in the wrong direction, which historically it seems that they are, it's something that we want to perhaps engage with before they officially become endangered.
Yes.
Emily, it sounded like you had something to add there.
Oh, I was just going to add that, yeah, that Big Dipper species is the one that's likely the most common that we're most familiar with doing that J-shaped pattern. And it's also really interesting because they do this at a rate that can vary with the temperature. So if it's hotter outside, that J-shaped pattern happens a little more quickly or between the flashing. And if it's a little bit colder, sometimes that'll happen slower. And they're doing this to attract mates. And normally, if a female would like to mate, she'll flash in response, but an uninterested female firefly is not going to respond.
Sometimes we see that in the human world as well.
Yes.
Emily, you'd mentioned earlier that fireflies are predators of other fireflies, so does that mean that they're eating their own?
Some species do. In some species, the female firefly will sort of eavesdrop on that interaction between mates. So the male is flying to try and attract a mate, and a female of a different species might see that and say, "Oh, I can, that's food source. I can go eat that individual." And she might take advantage of that interaction in that way.
And before we take a quick break, is there maybe one interesting firefly fact that we've not touched on, Tad, so far that people might be thinking about as they're searching for more of these insects?
One of the most interesting, sort of craziest stories I've heard involving fireflies is that the two chemicals they combine to make the light need energy in addition to create the light ATP. And I've been told that there are satellites flying through outer space that are coated with those two chemicals, waiting for a single bacteria or living organism to touch them that would have ATP and then light up. And they have cameras pointed at those panels looking for the faintest amount of light. So effectively, we're using fireflies to look for aliens in outer space.
Oh my goodness, that
That's
is very
so
cool.
cool.
All Well, this is a great spot to take a very quick break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation. We'll talk about solutions and what we can do around this question of preservation. We also want to hear from you. What insects are you seeing or hearing this summer? We'll take your questions and anecdotes after the break. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at parrot.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about lightning bugs, or fireflies, and other insects with entomologists Tad Yankowski and Emily Althoff. Before the break, we were talking about some interesting firefly facts, you know, why it is maybe people have this relationship with lightning bugs. People have contacted us, actually, about what they've seen. Some, like Kaylin, have said, we're seeing fireflies for the first time in years. Another, Carmen, said more lightning bugs than we've had for a few years. And then we also have Kathy, who says, I haven't seen a single firefly. So not having seen a single one, I had introed this conversation by saying I went out for a walk. I saw one firefly, but I think it might just have been too early in the day for that. So for those who are hoping to catch sight of some of these illuminating insects, what is the best time and the best environment for doing that, Tad?
So we tend to see the fireflies come out right around dusk. About 8:30 at night seems to be a good time to see fireflies. They usually spend their day hiding in the shade under trees or at the forest edge. So if you're in the middle of a giant lawn, it's not the best place to see them. But if there's trees, shelter, maybe some shrubs, that's a great place. We've had a few people email us at the Butterfly House saying, where are all the fireflies this year? You know, so it may also be locally dependent. There could just be some areas that perhaps were a little drier or had a different microclimate where there just aren't as many fireflies. But it seems overall there's a lot more than normal.
Yeah. Emily, is there anything about urban environment and where we might go in urban areas to experience the wonder of lightning bugs?
Yeah, I think I would reiterate some of the points that Tad made as far as timing and precipitation in certain areas, and also the availability of soil moisture. So if you're in an area that really hasn't gotten very much precipitation or had those moist microclimates for the fireflies, there might not be as many in those areas. However, if you have something like a forested area or ditches where there might be some additional water, those are some factors you might consider as well. Mm-hmm. Additionally, sometimes our native gardens, if we have planted native plants, might be able to retain some of that water a little bit better through their root systems. So that's another consideration that you could think about in some of these more urban areas.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we came into the break, we promised that we would talk about solutions, and insects, not just fireflies, but many other insects, are important to our environmental health, and preservation is a really big thing. Now, there are a lot of social media posts that are circulating right now that say, rather fatalistically, we're the last generation to see fireflies. And our producer, Emily Woodbury, is particularly interested in hearing you all discuss this because it gets at sort of what does and doesn't work in conservation. Is an alarmist approach to what we will or won't see, is that effective? I mean, what is a good way to approach talking about conservation and preservation, Tad?
Well, the reality is that insects across the board are in steep decline, you know. There's less than 50% of the insect biomass that there was perhaps 50 years ago. And that is the base for every main ecosystem on the planet. And that is incredibly worrisome, and that's an understatement to entomologists. The good news is that there are tools and processes available that we can save these insects and save animals. The Endangered Species Act has a 99% success rate for species that have been listed on that. And that's including birds and everything else that is, you know, perhaps more charismatic or well-known than insects. But if we put our efforts to it, we can save these species. Mm-hmm. But it is a multifaceted approach that has to happen.
Is there a species that you can name that has been saved?
Well, insects or...
Yeah,
or
insects.
Well, the American burying beetle is is one that we worked with right here in St. Louis. We're lucky to have the Center for the American Burying Beetle Conservation at the St. Louis Zoo. We've been lucky enough to partner with them on some releases. And they are potentially delisting that species. And that's been established in a few locations around the country. And we hope to continue with that.
Yeah. Emily, did you have something to add there?
Oh, I was just agreeing with Tad with the American burying beetle as a really glowing story of success that's based right here in Missouri. Mm-hmm. I was so excited. I took a behind-the-scenes tour at the zoo the other day and was able to actually see them in person for the first time ever. And they're so beautiful and fascinating.
Mm-hmm. We have Charlie, who's calling from St. Louis, with something to add about community effort. Charlie, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'd just like to kind of remind the viewers, our listeners, that there is a great citizen science project called Firefly Watch that now has about 10 to 15 years of counts each summer. And I've been doing it for about 8 years. And I think I'm seeing a few more fireflies this summer than last summer. Last summer seemed kind of particularly hot and dry, and this year seems a little better. So.
Mm-hmm. How many people are involved with the Firefly Watch effort?
Oh, Firefly Watch is all over the country. It's got its third host now. It started out Boston Museum of Science, then it was Massachusetts Audubon, and I'm not sure who it is now. And unfortunately, each time they change from platform, it takes a little while to convert the data over. So the maps aren't very current. If you search on Firefly Watch now, they're trying to adapt the. But there are hundreds of people all over the country, and I think out of different countries. So you can start when the maps were working. You could pull them up early in the summer and watch the fireflies approaching where you were, and even see some strange occurrences like out in California and out in Colorado and Utah. So it's a fascinating project.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing about that. I'm sure that there are many people who are interested also in following. We got a question from Anne in Kirkwood, and she asks, what's going on with crickets? I've been hearing a lot of cicadas this year, but not crickets. Tad, do you have any insight into that?
I have not heard of any real changes with the cricket population. It could be something as simple as the climate was not as hospitable maybe around their house. At the butterfly house, I feel like we've seen quite a few field crickets when we were out. We recently had our Firefly and Friends Festival, and we were out looking for fireflies during that, and I saw a lot of crickets that night.
Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the crickets, Emily?
I would have a similar response. I'm not quite sure what might be going on with the crickets over there this year. Perhaps something with precipitation or microclimates.
Mm-hmm.
I've been getting some calls both from folks throughout Missouri as well as colleagues about crickets in homes this year because they like those damp, dark basements sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, in some cultures, crickets are considered good luck. So maybe it's a good thing that they're...
That's what I keep telling them.
Yeah, absolutely. That they're inside. It's music, right? We also heard from Trisha, who is seeing or feeling so many mosquitoes. And I relate to that. She says that nothing, I mean nothing, is helping. We also got Hillary writing in to ask about mosquito dunks. People swear by them, but I need placement details, she says. I understand how to make them, but how and where they should be placed, you know, a certain distance from the patio, in the middle of the garden, or at the edge of it, etc. What of that? And maybe before we get to that, what is a mosquito dunk? Tad?
So this is also called the mosquito bucket of doom, is what it's been sort of referred to on social media. At its core, the idea is to try to lower the number of mosquitoes around your house. Instead of spraying pesticides or fogging for them, you create an area that they want to breed in, basically a 5-gallon bucket with water, maybe some leaves, and then you put what's called a mosquito dunk inside. The mosquito dunk is a type of insecticide that's specific to flies and mosquitoes. It's called BT, which is from a bacteria. And the idea is it would kill all the mosquitoes that get laid in that bucket. Unfortunately, I've talked to a few of my colleagues who study mosquito control. They don't really think that they are much of a solution. It's sort of a popular fad right now. The reality is you need to eliminate all sources around your house. That could be standing water in gutters, tires, ditches. That's how you're going to reduce mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. The mosquito buckets themselves aren't going to be incredibly effective.
Yeah. In the last 30 seconds or so that we have, what insects are coming soon that you will be looking out for, Emily?
The biggest ones I am on the lookout for right now are a couple of invasive species, especially the spotted lanternfly. That's the one that I've got my eyes peeled for, I'm looking for here in Missouri.
And how about you, Ty?
On a more positive note, I agree with Emily about the lanternflies, but we're going to be watching for those fall migrating monarchs. There'll be a couple months where they're coming through the area. We hope to see a renewed number and hopefully more than last year coming through.
And hopefully more people posting to social media that they're seeing those monarchs.
Absolutely.
Tad Yankowski is the senior entomologist at the Missouri Botanical Garden Butterfly House, and Emily Althoff is an urban entomologist with MU Extension and Lincoln University. Emily and Tad, thank you for bugging us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.